the pressure of that industry, I think it just really got to me. And I basically became hospitalized for a good couple of months. My kidneys had failed on me. I had sepsis. I had E. coli. I had like 10 bursts cysts. That was a bit of a wake-up call.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to Superwoman Wellness. I'm Dr. Taz. I've made it my mission throughout my career in integrative medicine to support women in restoring their health using a blend of Eastern medical wisdom with modern science. In this show, I will guide you through different practices to find your power type and fully embody the healthiest and most passionate version of you. I'm here for you, and I can't wait to get started.
Welcome back, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of Superwoman Wellness, where we are constantly learning and trying to bring each and every one of us back to our superpowered self. And thinking through that, nutrition and food, remember, is a source of our powers. It gives us sustenance and energy. And when we get it right, we feel amazing. But when we get it wrong, we are bumbling around. And I think, as many of you already know, I've been in practice for over 15 years. I've been on this integrative holistic path for probably 20. And the biggest complaint I continue to get is that people are so confused by food. What do you eat? When do you eat? How do you eat? What's healthy? What's not healthy? And all that information leads down one road, and that's paralysis, where you kind of do nothing. So to help us today, I am so honored to bring a guest from across the pond. I have Sarah Ann Macklin with me. She is a multifaceted force in the realms of health, nutrition, and advocacy. She is the founder of one of UK's biggest health podcasts, Live Well, Be Well. She's a registered nutritionist who's also been a journalist for Vanity Fair and a voice to the EU Parliament on mental health and nutrition, and as well as being a pioneer in wellness. Formerly, she was the face, She was the face of Burberry, which is one of my favorite brands, by the way, in the fashion world. And her personal story of overcoming physical and mental health issues, as well as a late diagnosis of dyslexia, letter to nutrition. Sarah Ann is a charismatic spokesperson. She's here with me today. Welcome to the show. I should have connected the Burberry thing. We love Burberry. In fact, I was just telling you, my family and I were in London earlier in the month, and that was one of the places we went. We stopped in a Burberry store. My husband is obsessed. So we definitely enjoyed that. But you've got to tell us how you go from being the face of Burberry to now the face of UK nutrition. How does that transition happen? And what was your journey in that process?
Oh my gosh. Thank you, first of all, so much for such a sublime and amazing introduction. Incredible kind of, you know, overhaul on the importance of nutrition that so many people have those questions too. So firstly, you summed it up perfectly. So thank you for doing my job. Secondly, it is a very obscure landscape, right? Going from international model. I mean, I was modeling for, I've been signed as model. I'm still in the industry, but I've stepped back greatly in the last 10 years. I was signed at a wee age of 15. A tiny young adolescent, and was shooting for Burberry by the age of 16. And then, you know, I was in New York, living there for 5 years, shooting with some kind of huge American brands, and loved New York. But at that point, I think all that kind of quick success in a very high-pressured industry hit me incredibly hard without having any realization of what was going on in my body. And I think anyone listening to this, I don't know if you can relate to this as well. I'm sure you can.
Yeah.
But when you kind of have an opportunity, and I was from, you know, a really normal background, these things just didn't happen to people from where I was from. So as soon as I had this kind of amazing opportunity at Grasp, I just went for it. But didn't take a moment to kind of sit and reflect about anything that I was doing. And living in New York at that point, I've been there for 5 years. The pressure of that industry, I think, had just really got to me. And I basically became hospitalized for a good couple of months. My kidneys had failed on me. I had sepsis. I had E. coli. I had like 10 bursts cysts. Okay. I mean, I was in isolation unit for a really, really long time. ICU. And so that was a bit of a wake-up call, but not so much so that I actually went back to New York. I was really, really small, and I don't know what this is in pounds, forgive me, but I was, you know, about five and a half stone, which is really small for somebody who's 5'9", which is like 175, very, very small. And obviously in a very sad light, that did very well in the high fashion world back in New York. And then my dad had a brain hemorrhage. And I remember cycling around Hyde Park. And my mom was calling me and calling me and calling me. And I was like, "Mom, why do you keep calling me?" She said, "Your dad is in ICU, similar to me 6 months ago. And he's had a bleed on the brain and we need you to get home." And it was in that kind of moment that I'd realized I'd been so detached from my life. You know, I'd been living in New York. I didn't have any time to see my friends, spend time with my family, like any of that important nourishment that we know about community or kind of connection.
Right.
And was living from hotel room to hotel room with a new set every single day. And as much as, you know, it all sounds very glamorous, we now know so much about health. It's about finding our purpose, our sense of community, people we trust. And, you know, I kind of had that all stripped back from the age of 16, just to try to feel that I could succeed in something. And so I actually came back to London to become a registered nutritionist, because the thing I remember in that moment of going back to see my dad was I was in this situation 6 months previous to this and had never actually, even in that moment of being in hospital for months, gone, "I need to reassess what's going on." And it wasn't until I thought I'd lost somebody who I adored so much that was my wake-up call. And the first thing that I thought, what do I need to work on, is I actually need to know how to look after myself, because I was sucked into a ball of kind of a wellness culture that was emerging. And this is going back 12 years ago, where healthy nutrition was quite a new thing back then, especially in the UK. Like, no one knew what a nutritionist was. In the US, it was a bit more prominent in that sector, but it was still quite new. And I remember kind of really going quite hardcore on it and actually being very misinformed, very misaligned, and just doing what the media was kind of pronouncing as what's right and wrong. So I got very, very sucked into it. And it wasn't until I was back studying, it felt like a real Legally Blonde moment, where like I walked into the classroom and I kind of like sat down with like a mulberry handbag and everyone just looked at me. And there was like this one scene of Legally Blonde, but they all go around and talk about these amazing credentials, and she talks about kind of her homecoming queen moment. And I was like, "God, this is so me. But it was in that moment where I was like, the power of nutrition is so impactful, not just to how we feel and look, right, which is really important for a model, but also to like our mental health, which I realized for mine was so poor. And that when they found out I was dyslexic. And so all of that kind of combined, I was like, oh my gosh, it was the first time I kind of understood a bit more about myself. And then from that moment on, when I started to really connect a bit more about who I actually was as a person, everything changed. Like, everything changed.
That's so hard, though. I'm thinking about that. I've met other models, too, and they tell the same story. It's the same of, you know, kind of getting, first of all, picked at the super, super young age, right? I have a 16-year-old right now, and I can't imagine her going from hotel room to hotel room. And, you know, she's already up and down. So I can't imagine, like, having to like grow up and master that skill, you know, and then just the emphasis on your physical appearance and getting sucked into that and getting rewarded oftentimes for behaviors that are not healthy, which I actually see in culture too. If you actually look at the culture of our teenagers today, there's a lot of, you know, positive reinforcement and reward for looking a certain way. So I just feel like it's such a high pressure environment, and so many, just like you, end up getting sick in the process, you know. But I find your story so interesting, because it wasn't your health that motivated you. It was actually the health of somebody you truly care about, you know, which I've noticed too in practice. It's either you have a personal health crisis or someone that you care very deeply about, you watch their journey and you decide you want something differently. How did getting into nutrition become the segue for nurturing yourself versus, you know, there's so many things. Some people become fitness enthusiasts, some people, you know, bodybuild, you know, some people go rowing. I don't know. How is nutrition your, how did that become your focus?
So it was one of those things where for me, so this is, I'm going to try and make everyone rewind back to 12 years ago, because how I talk about it now is so different. So I remember being in New York, and Instagram had just launched, right? And people were taking some nice pictures of the food, but it was becoming, I don't know, quite culty in a way. And I was getting quite like ashamed of things that I was posting, or everything's got to have this perfectionism lens, which also was how the modeling industry was. There was like this perfectionism to kind of how you had to be. And so what I describe now, I also feel was very relevant to everyone, because back then, the modeling industry was a very high pressured kind of bubble that you lived in and that most people kind of couldn't really relate to. Now I think everyone relates to it. I now don't just think it's the modeling industry. I think everyone every day opens up their phones and looks and compares themselves constantly. Yep. So I was living in a world of this really intense comparison and also my financial worth. So if I got picked, that was great. I got paid. If I didn't get picked, that wasn't so great. I didn't get paid. So the pressure to make sure that my financial success was on my kind of how I looked and my worth was really stressful. And now a lot of people have that with social media. And so the comparisons now are really close, but 12 years ago, it wasn't like that. And I remember the thing that I felt a lot of pressure on was my body and how I looked. And everybody would be telling you their way is the right way. And to make sure, yeah, it was quite a lot of scaremongering around clean eating and how you should be doing a certain way with how you're looking at your diet. And I obviously, because it was such a new landscape, really believed everything and didn't look at anything with scrutiny. Now, I wasn't scientifically trained at that point. So for me, what somebody said was the truth. You know, if I read something from the media, that was true. Or if somebody was telling me this is really good for me and I shouldn't be having this food with this food, I was like, okay, well, then that makes sense. I'll give that a go. So I really went down that route. And it's not because I had an eating disorder. It's because I was so aware that how I looked was important, that I wanted my skin to flourish. I wanted my hair to look beautiful. So I was, you know, kind of bringing in all of this information subconsciously, which actually was getting me in a complete rut. And I see that now with everyone. And so for me, when I ended up in hospital, none of my view towards eating and nourishing my body was for my own pleasure or for what I actually felt my body needed. I had no idea of what I needed in my body. I just had to completely shut off any intuition or any compassion about what I needed. It was more about what was everyone telling me and I'll do that.
Right.
And so for me, I started getting like a bit scared of food. I started thinking like, gosh, that might kill me if I eat these things. And actually it wasn't that way at all. It was just how it was being kind of interpreted to me. And I think I was in such an intense lens of it. And as well, I was around so many girls that all felt the same. So when you're kind of in a bubble where everyone also feels the same, it's a bit like being back at school, you know, that is the way that you view your food. And so for me, when I realized kind of how small I'd got, how restricted I got with my food, all of that type of stuff, and just how it was being portrayed, and everyone else around me had that same realization, I was like, there's got to be something going on here. So for me, there was no like logical concept of I want to go into nutrition and, you know, this is my one passion. For me, it was like, I just need to understand more about my body. And I want to understand this from a true scientific literature perspective, because I'd actually like to go and help a lot of people that I know are struggling. And that was my main goal. It was more about, I've got to a really bad place with this. A lot of people I know are in a bad place with this, but I don't know where to go and ask for help. And so for me, it was about going back to train in that and then being able to kind of like disseminate that information out to more people. First of all, my industry, and then obviously it's kind of now taking a whole like journey
from there.
And through that, I've seen people go from not knowing what a nutritionist is or not looking at their food with kind of, you know, any type of lens, to now it's just being kind of, it's so saturated everywhere, which is amazing because, you know, we can have so much access, but now there's a lot more information out there. So now it's even more of kind of a complicated landscape to understand, which really, when you truly understand it and you'll know this, it shouldn't be complicated.
I know.
So now trying to strip it back the other way.
Very much. I mean, I just meet people who are just so overwhelmed. And I'm thinking too, you know, there was so much noise about clean eating and eating this way versus that way. And honestly, there were some people who developed, and you probably know this, orthorexia, right? Where they became so like obsessive about how clean their food was or how perfect their diets were. And, you know, we found ourselves dealing with that somewhere along the journey. So I think food, and you mentioned a word that I think people are talking about more, but I still feel like it's difficult. Intuition is, and really like listening to what you need. But, you know, I was just talking to somebody about this yesterday. Sometimes there's so much noise that you can't even listen to what you need. So how do you get to understanding what's right for you in the landscape of so much information? What's a good way to get there?
So this is my main, this is what I try and pride myself on now with all of my work. It's become really integral, and it's become integral because it's something I've experienced myself through my own journey, and now looking at the kind of where the scientific literature sits, it's really, really important is self-compassion. And it's very different to intuitive, your intuitive kind of feelings around food, because we are, as you said, in a heavy obesogenic environment, right? You know, three quarters of our supermarket shelves are full of processed and ultra processed foods. So trying to kind of, you know, I would intuitively every day want to eat pizza and chocolate, but my body is not going to love that every single day. It's going to love that now and again, but every single day, that's not what my body needs to kind of flourish. So the kind of the intuition is can be lost in a kind of a very obesogenic environment. And also every time we open our phones and we look at TikTok and we look at the, like, you know, in Britain, we've got the Great British Veg Off. That was my book. Great British Bake Off, which obviously is all about cake.
Yes.
All that time. If you try and think about like what we're kind of consuming, a lot of it is about kind of this like high satiety foods, lots of sugar, lots of sweets, that type of stuff. It's really hard to intuitively go, I really fancy some vegetables today, because it's just not what we're kind of consuming day to day. So a really big thing that I talk about is self-compassion. And people might go, well, how does that relate to food? It relates it in a way on when I look at my journey and how I started to become more connected to the food environment around me and the food I was consuming and the nourishment is for a long time, I just didn't like myself. For a long time, I had no compassion for myself. Even after I studied nutrition, I went on to build a not-for-profit organization to help other people, but never, ever looked at myself. What do I need? And so many times, as even in my journey, I changed my career because of my father, not because of my own health problems.
Yourself, right.
And so many times, and I'm sure everyone in some way, shape, or form can relate to this, we're more likely to do something nice for someone else than ourselves. So we're more likely to cook a beautiful, gorgeous meal for when friends come over or we're on a date or, you know, somebody that we love, we're way more likely to put more time into doing that for someone else than if you were just to go home tonight after recording this.
Totally.
I'm just going to cook a really beautiful meal for myself. So much about how we see ourselves is rooted in how much love and self-compassion we have for ourselves. And so that's kind of the essence of how people can try and get back to feeling what they need. Because it's not always got to be perfect. It's not you've got to live this perfect, healthy diet. It's about understanding how much love and respect you have for yourself when it comes to this topic. And that's what's really important, is finding out the kind of compassion angle within yourself. So I always try to say to people, put yourself into your best friend's body and ask what they need. And that's normally what you need. And that's a really kind of powerful entry point to kind of start thinking about that as a narrative about caring for yourself first when it comes to this space. So
I think for people to get there, though, like this undercurrent of stress and distraction and kind of just running from task to task to task, I think that kind of starts that conversation. I feel like people can't even get to self-compassion because they're just so burdened, you know, like they're so, especially women and girls, I feel like they just have so much on their plate. They're so distracted. Social media is so distracting, you know. So what are, like, if you're trying to dial in, you know, to that conversation, I had a patient the other day, she was cracking me up. She flew in from Canada and she was trying to tell me all the things she was doing. She's like, I'm like a Buddha. I'm like breathing. I'm doing yoga. I'm like sitting there like center. And she goes, it's not working. You know, she's like, it's just not working. And so she had me on the floor because I could literally see her doing all of that. But like when we're trying to dial in and we're all busy, you know, what is a good way to foster the skill of self-compassion? What is a good way to do that?
Honestly, that story felt like so much of my life. I was like, I'm doing all of these things. Why is it not working?
Right, exactly.
And it's such a big thing. And honestly, because we just need to give ourselves a break, that's like my first thing. And I was doing a talk last week and exactly the same conversation came up. One person in the audience said, I do yoga every day. I go for a run 4 times a week. I'm running my own business. I don't even have time to do all my emails. Like, I feel so stressed. Like, how can I even take a moment to think about this? Mm-hmm. And I said, that's the thing. You need to take a moment. Like, we're trying to add more to our tick lists and more to our to-do lists and more that if we do all of these things, this is the outcome. And actually, one of the main things of self-compassion is to realize that to be human is to be imperfect. So we can't have all these perfect tick lists all the time of sitting there mindfully and feeling like we're a Buddha. Like, that's not being self-compassionate. It's about actually understanding that as you're going through this, to be human is to be imperfect. So you're going to slip up. You're going to fail. And it's about having awareness in that moment to know when enough is enough and to take just even like a day out. And I know that sounds a lot, but 365 days a year to take one day when you're feeling all of this and still do the things that you need to be, whether it's be a mom or whatever it is, but just trying to take a little bit of a respite and that weight off your shoulders is actually the first place if you're in that state of complete overwhelming. Because we're not even compassionate enough to realize that. But if a friend came to you, and it's one of the biggest things I say, if a friend comes to you and says, all of this, what would you say to that friend? What would
just
you say?
Relax.
Just relax. Like,
yeah. So
just take, you wouldn't be out. Like,
or what can I do for you? You know, yeah.
You wouldn't say, you actually do need to meditate more. Actually, what you really need to get out and walk. Actually, what you also really need to do with all these things, a lot of it is actually like, just take a moment and take a breath. And when we actually can strip things back and allow ourselves to say, do you know what? I'm actually just going to know that right now I can't live to all of these tick lists, you actually feel a lot of that burden start to release. And you can't do that all the time, but it's really important to give yourself a kind of a moment to acknowledge it and to realize it. And that's really, really important. I do think that when we look at ourselves, we always never want to hit a failure point. And actually, we're all going to fail at some point, whether it comes to our food, our diet, our stress levels, whatever it is, we're never going to hit this perfectionism. And we're all setting ourselves up to hit this. And actually, that's when the biggest kind of burden and shame and inner critic starts coming up, telling us that we're not good enough. And actually, that's the moment. That is the moment when we have to really acknowledge that self-compassion. That's when our test really starts, is that's the moment when self-compassion is the most powerful. So it's actually in those hardest moments where we can do ourselves the greatest justice of using
Well, let's think about the, you know, we talk a lot about moms and busy career women, but what about, and sometimes I experience this because I travel a lot too for work and I'm on my own and away from the family. And I kind of have a little bit of that attitude, like, whatever, I don't need to eat dinner. Like, I could just get a snack or things like that. So what is it for the women that just need to feed themselves? If you could, you know, if you could hand them like three things that they could be thinking about every day to really nourish their bodies, because there's fear of kitchen, there's the idea that you don't have to take care of yourself, and then there's just time as the major variable. So what would you, you know, what would you pass on to them as like a word of advice or wisdom?
There's a couple of things. So the one thing that I would say, and it's spoken about quite a lot, but it's mindful eating. And I always say, like, throughout your day, whenever you've got anything, food and nourishment in front of you, and it doesn't have to be, you know, this amazing array of fruit and vegetables, whatever you've had time to get, allow yourself just that 15 minutes to sit down with that food. And don't put the TV on. Don't put a podcast on. Don't put anything on. Just allow yourself to connect with that food that's on your plate. That's a really big starting point, because you're actually taking that time to have a connection with that food. And we know when people are more mindful with the food that they're consuming, they're more likely to have better hunger signals. A lot of the time we have not got any hunger signals because we're constantly pushing things down our throat all the time at really high speed. And we don't have any time to make that connection of what we're eating. So a really big thing is mindful eating. It's just being aware and being present with that food. It's like listening to the sound of it, actually feeling the taste of it, like how much are you eating of it? All of that does drive greater satiety, which means that we get full, but it also takes a moment for us to also have a bit of a respite that no one seems to have. And so that meal time is really important. Even if it's just 15 minutes of that entire day, having that. So that's like the first step. So that's not even thinking about the food that's on your plate. That's actually just being present with the food. And that's a really, really
big That's a really good one. I think so many of us probably don't do that when we're alone. I like that. Anything else that you would pass on is like, hey, like you're by yourself, you don't have 20 people to feed, do this.
Yeah. So I would always say, think about, everyone says like, what's your one favorite meal? But I'd always say, even right now, just try and think about the five things that make you really happy when it comes to food. And try to at least once a month when you're on your own, cook that for yourself. Just actually do it as in like, I'm going to do this because I love it. No one else loves it. My kids don't love it. My husband doesn't love it. My friends don't love it. I love it. And I've got five meals that I love that make me really happy. And so when we are kind of in that busyness, knowing that you've got some time, whether it's that day or that month that you've got that's for yourself is really, really important. So having that as well is really, really, really key. Because so many times, as you said, you'll probably get home and be like, oh, I don't know, I might have a slice of toast. That's all I've got time for. But actually knowing that you've got kind of these five key recipes in your mind is really important to draw on. To say, no, actually, I know. I know I deserve this, Taz. I know I really deserve this tonight. And I'm actually going to go and make this. And it doesn't feel such a mental exhaustion because you've already thought about these five things that make you really happy. It's when we get to the end of the day and we're like, I don't even have the energy to think about what I want. But knowing you've already got five recipes that give you so much joy and happiness, then that's the thing that you, you don't
have to think. I think the thinking is the hard part. I think, you know, when people find themselves in a situation where they have to think and they're already behind. I think to your point, like, I love that, like, be mindful when you eat, even if you're by yourself, and then have kind of a list. I've got one in my phone that we just kind of cycle through of things that we'll make. I'm going to add to it, though, and add things that I love versus, because there are a lot of things that I really, really love.
This is a thing.
But I don't make them because they all won't eat them, you know? So,
this is a thing.
So I'll have to do that. I love that.
What would it be for you? Like, what would be something where you're like, I don't make that, but it's like one of my favorite things to eat?
Oh, my gosh. I love, like, eggplant parmesan. You know, and I make it in a, like,
invite me over for dinner when you make that.
Oh, my God. I love it. But, like, they don't like eggplant or they don't want this or that. You know what I mean? So it's kind of like my thing, but I hardly ever eat it because it's not a family favorite. So that's an example for sure. And I'm sure there's so many more. I mean, I love Brussels sprouts, but they don't, you know. So it's just like this random stuff, you know, that I will do, but not everybody in the family necessarily jumps on it. So, but I love those. Those are great, great, great tips. And I think you talk about more of this on your show, right? Live Well, Be Well, which is one of the top UK health podcasts. Tell us a little bit about your show and even how folks can connect with you.
Yeah. So we, like you, Taz, we have a podcast called Live Well, Be Well. And it started actually, so I'd run this not-for-profit mental health organization for years. And we still run it now in the UK. It's a mental health initiative. But during COVID, there was one thing where we used to go and record a lot in studios, and obviously everything had shut down. So for me to try and get out really important, accessible scientific information, I wanted to like create a show. And now it's become its own entity 5 years later, which is amazing. And a lot of it is actually based on what I have truly believed and what I've suffered with on my journey in this whole landscape. And you'll relate to this so much that sometimes I just didn't know where to turn for kind of accessible health information that had a holistic landscape. And that's mental, physical, and emotional. And I felt that when I was learning nutrition, it was just very physical. It was just this one thing. And there was less about kind of the mind-body connection. But something that also helped me on my journey was hearing people's stories and their own journeys. And I was like, when I connect to somebody, what they've gone through, that makes me feel quite seen. And that was a really important thing for my show where I was like, I want to bring on people's stories and get them to connect and feel seen. But I also want to bring on kind of fantastic scientists talking about the most important kind of up-to-date landscape of emotional, physical, mental health onto the show. So it's kind of seven different pillars that it works on. And it comes out every week. And honestly, I feel like it's been a university for me. Like, I feel like just this continuous CPD training. Right. That when anyone comes on the show, I feel like I've topped up my bank of a university degree. So yeah, so I feel very like privileged, I'm sure as you do, to kind of speak to just different people every week and just see the community that we've kind of grown along the way and how it's helped people. So yeah, so now we're taking on YouTube, which which is a whole kind of beast in itself, but
yes,
a lot of fun.
No, fantastic. I love that. Congratulations on everything that you're doing. What do you hope will come of the show and of the information that you're putting out? What are you hoping people will walk away with?
I really want people to walk away when I do the show. I'm sure this is very similar. I really feel this is really similar to yours, but just not confused and empowered.
Yeah.
For me, the biggest thing when it comes to health is to make people feel empowered to make a change on whatever that is for them. And I take health as a very individual viewpoint that every single person is completely unique. And there is not one set of rules that applies to anyone. The biggest thing for me is getting people to connect more with themselves on who they are, and then allowing them to go on a bit of a self-discovery journey with correct information at hand. Obviously, if you go on a bit of a journey with the wrong information at hand, it can go a little bit skew-whiff. But if you go with the right information, you can kind of hopefully feel quite empowered when you make choices. And I really believe that health should not be complicated. It should not make you feel anxious. It should not make you feel overwhelmed. It should just make you feel quite empowered and seen. And actually, at the end of it, you do feel a change, and you do see a change in your emotions and your mental and physical health state. And that's what I feel a lot of people that connect to our show end up going on, that they don't feel told what to do, which is really important. And they just feel a bit inspired. And I think that's something that if we can get people to do that, then that's kind of the end goal, I think, of how we should be looking at our health. So,
that's the
end kind of part of the show, really.
And I think you and I are very aligned too in this idea that there are all these different layers to the body and they're interconnected. So it's really about finding somewhere to start, because it'll ricochet into all these different aspects of your health, you know. So just start somewhere. If it's drinking one extra glass of water a day, that's still a win, you know. So just remember that wherever you start is starting somewhere. And this is really a journey. I wish I had a better word for it, but like, the longer I do this, it's very much like this moving journey where we will land in a place and then we'll land in a different place, but like, we're kind of twisting and turning along the way, and really just moving up throughout the journey, right? Getting stronger and better and, you know, wiser very much about who we are and what we need and what we want. And again, being able to voice that too. So I think that shows that assist people on those journeys are so needed. So I'm excited for yours and excited to see it here in the US as well. So, and if anyone wants to connect with you, what's the best way to connect? Is it through the show
is
there another way?
Yes. Please, please, please connect. I love, honestly, one of my biggest happinesses is connecting with people who listen to the show or part of our community.
It.
So we have a newsletter. So if you go to my site, sarahannemacklin.com, you can subscribe to my newsletter for free. But if not, just send me a message on Instagram, Sarah Macklin, Sarah Ann Macklin, which is my Instagram. And I read all the reviews that come through. So if you kind of write a review or write a comment on YouTube, then, you know, I'm always going to
wonderful.
Reply. So any way that's right.
I love it. Well, thank you for taking time out. What time is it there, by the way?
It is 20 to 7 in the
evening. Okay, gotcha. That's right. We had the 5-hour difference. Well, it's so good to have you on the show. It's so nice to meet you. I hope we'll stay connected. And for everybody else watching and listening to this episode, don't forget to rate and review it and share it with your friends. And I will see you guys soon.